to the 13 Skulls. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. In this episode, we take a look at the secrets of the ancient walls of Sacsayhuaman. Italian pizzerias are using wood from stolen coffins to cook with. Phantom Eye Syndrome. The Ninth Circle Satanic Child Sacrifice Cult Network. And the world is going to end in September. That and a lot more in this 69th episode of the 13 Skulls. Welcome back, everybody, for the 69th episode of the 13 Skulls. I hope you guys are doing good. Sorry it's taken me a little while to get back behind the mic. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do. I've got some new ideas for content that I want to put out pretty much every week, so I'm not really sure what I'm going to do at this point. I'm looking to maybe start with some throwback stuff from earlier episodes, kind of reposting them during the week, keep you satisfied until new episodes come out, maybe some old paranormal news. I'm not really sure. It might just be a mix and match of different things. I might throw some new content in there. I'm not really sure. I wanted to give a huge, huge thank you to Glenn out there, and I believe it's Las Vegas now, for the donation that you gave me for the show, man. It is greatly appreciated. I really can't say thank you enough. It really will help me keep the show going. And for anybody else who's listening out there, if you want, give a donation to the show. There's a link to it on the right sidebar of the13skulls.com. I'll get more into that later. But I had to say thank you, Glenn. You know who you are, man. And I truly, truly appreciated it. It means the world to me that you would do that. It costs money to run a podcast, whether it's, you know, not very much money or it is. It doesn't, you know, depending on which direction you go. Any money helps, and it really, really did. I truly appreciate it, Glenn. Thank you so much, man. Really do appreciate it. a note of going about the website. I might be changing the web hosting at some point in time. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do. I really haven't made up my mind. I like Podbean. They're good. But I want to maybe try to build it myself and maybe go through a host site just for the audio itself. I'm not really sure, but anyway, if you need any voiceover work done, I am in the process of beginning my voiceover career. My voice, it varies a little bit more according to what I want it to sound like. What you hear is what I normally talk with. The sound of my voice, I don't make it any lower. This is just who I am. But if you need any voiceover work, let me know. I would be more than willing to do it for you at a reasonable rate, probably below what you could normally get it done for, just because I'm starting out and I need the work. So if you know anybody who does need any voiceover work, let me know. I do have a little bit more of a dynamic voice than what I show on here. So, if you think it might be a fit for me, let me know. Contact me in some way and maybe you can help me start my voiceover career. I have an extra hardcover, The Champion by Scott Sigler. It's autographed by him, although it is personalized to me. I'm thinking about trying to give it away to somebody. And I was thinking about just taking it to a library or something and donating it there, which I'm going to do if I can't find somebody to give it to. It's numbered. It's a limited edition run. I'm thinking I might come up with maybe a contest or something to give this out to somebody. I'll keep you guys posted on it right now. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do, but just to let you know, I'm using a new audio program here to record the show. I think it might be a little hissy. I've been trying to get rid of it. It's a little bit difficult to do, but I'm working on it and making progress. I'm also looking to get a new microphone and a soundboard and everything to get me into an XLR microphone instead of a USB like I have now. The audio is just better. I have started a Patreon campaign. It's patreon.com/the13skulls and a crowdfunding, basically the same thing as Patreon through Podbean. If you want to financially support the show, as Glenn did, you can make a donation one time if you want, or you can sign up with Patreon and Podbean, either one, to keep the show going. Not going to ask for money. If you want to, please do. If you don't want to do it, it's understandable. I completely understand. But you can if you want. I've put links up to it. So let's go ahead and, one last thing. That zombie outbreak response team vehicle video that I posted a link to in the last episode, it was just a link in the show notes. I couldn't get it to embed on the website, which is one of the reasons why I want to change websites. But I've posted it in YouTube. It's the13skulls.com. I'll post it up again so you can go visit it. Or you can just go to YouTube and find my channel. I'm not even sure how you do that. It's the first time I've ever done anything with YouTube. I know I'm pretty late to the game or whatever, but still, it's there. I'll post a link up to it. So let's go ahead and get on with the show. All right, the first article is courtesy of business-standard.com. A new theme park in China. It's a unique experience for their customers as they've set up a death simulator where volunteers can experience being cremated. According to its creators, Huang Weiping and Ding Rui, once inside, players are then blasted by hot air up to 40, is what it says. So I'm believing maybe 40 Celsius instead of Fahrenheit, which I'm not sure what that would be, maybe 120 degrees, something like that. And light create a genuine experience of burning. When the burning is over, volunteers see a womb projected on the ceiling, must crawl until they reach a large white padded area supposedly representing a womb where they are reborn. The Samadhi game, which is what it's called, located in a corner of the window of the World Amusement Park in Shenzhen, opened in September of 2014 for roughly £26, simulates players' death by placing them in a coffin and then transporting them to the incinerator. Approximately 50% of Chinese elect for their cremation upon their death, and the creator said that they went to extensive lengths to ensure their simulation was accurate. This ended up being an article I believe Rojan sent to me. I just found this to be very fascinating. It shows you people's fascination with death and with that experience of dying, but how many people actually want to die? I mean, I'm sure there's a large population of people out there who want to die, but the mentality people have is slightly morbid. Whether people want to admit to it or not, they are, because they do have fascinations with death and experiencing death and what it's like afterwards. It's interesting. It's very fascinating for me to read that somebody's doing that. I kind of wish somebody would do it here. People do have a fascination with it here in the United States, but they won't really ever admit to it. for the most part anyway. But I believe you could make a lot of money off something like that here. Now, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of NewYorkDailyNews.com. A Zimbabwean vampire killer stands accused of murdering and drinking the blood of 13 women. Alois Nduna last week confessed to raping, slaying, and then draining the blood from his victims in the central and southern regions of the African nations. The 26-year-old claimed he was a Satanist and had been told by his church to drink the plasma to make him stronger. He described to Masvingo magistrate Longton Ndokara how he had killed Beauty Hove, also 26. "I grabbed Hove and bit her on the neck, after which I started sucking her blood until she lost consciousness. She fell down, and that's when I stopped sucking her blood." According to Nduna, who was arrested while out on a nightclub in Mvuma last week, remains in custody and will appear in court on May 26th. So he's already been in court. This article is obviously a little bit old. I wonder what happened to him. If he ended up going to prison for the rest of his life, or what happened to him. Interesting. I need to look for a follow-up on this article. But anyway, if anybody knows of a follow-up to this article, please let me know. I'd love to hear about it so I'm updated on the things that I'm talking about. The next article is courtesy of humansarefree.com. And this caught my eyes just because it's something that I think I have heard before, but I wasn't too sure. I find mysterious lost civilizations to be fascinating because I love ancient history. I love knowing that something completely different than what's happening in the place you're at now happened a long time ago. That something, you never know what could have been standing in your place where you're at this very second that you're listening to this. Just as Plato had cited the Egyptian legend of the sunken island of Atlantis, the Greek historian Herodotus mentioned the Egyptian legend of the continent of Hyperborea in the far north. When ice destroyed this ancient land, its people were said to have migrated south. Writing in 1679, the Swedish author Olof Rudbeck identified the Pro-Atlanteans with the Hyperboreans and located the latter in the north. In Greek mythology, the Hyperborean people lived beyond the north wind. The Greeks thought that the Boreas, the god of the north wind, lived in Thrace, and therefore Hyperborea indicates a region that lay far to the north of Thrace, such as like the North Pole. Herodotus recorded that three earlier sources had mentioned the Hyperboreans, including Hesiod and Homer. This land was described as perfect, with the sun shining 24 hours a day, suggesting a location within the Arctic Circle, according to the Greek poet Pindar. John G. Bennett wrote a research paper entitled "The Hyperborean Origin of the Indo-European Culture," in which he claimed the Indo-European homeland was in the far north, which he considered to be Hyperborea of classical antiquity. This idea was earlier proposed by Bal Gangadhar Tilak in his The Arctic Home in the Vedas in 1903, as well as the Austro-Hungarian ethnologist Karl Pinka. They moved from a place like that. It's a drastic transition from one place to the other. What kind of preparation did they have? Did they get supplies that they needed as they traveled? Or were the climates completely different back then to allow for such a drastic place change on the planet? It's pretty crazy. Anyway, I thought it was really interesting. There's a lot more there to it, so I want you guys to go take a look at it. Everything in the show will be posted in the show notes on the website. So the next article is courtesy of TulsaWorld.com. A Tulsa woman charged with vandalizing a corpse and burglarizing the dead woman's residence is now facing a fourth felony of unlawful removal of a deceased person's body part. She's now accused of removing both breasts and a toe from the woman during a viewing at Moore Funeral Home. Seriously. That's crazy. The viewing was open to the public and lasted for hours. It appears that she went in and out of the viewing room multiple times and was seen putting her hands in the casket. That was Assistant Director Attorney Andrea Brown who said that. When Sims was confronted about the contact, she reportedly said she was adjusting the woman's clothing. The deceased woman was the ex-girlfriend of Sims' boyfriend. Anyway, Sims was charged with unauthorized dissection for allegedly cutting the woman's face from her hairline at the tip of her nose and disruption of a funeral, both misdemeanors. How is that a misdemeanor? You cut someone along their hairline to the tip of their nose, and it's only a misdemeanor. As well as first-degree burglary, the woman is charged with larceny from a person and knowingly concealing stolen property on accusations that she stole from the woman's residence. Sims was arrested at the woman's apartment the day of the funeral and was found to be holding a knife, a box cutter, and scissors in her possession. The deceased woman's family told police that Sims had also cut the woman's hair and smeared her makeup. The knife contained hair consistent with the deceased woman's. Sims received a suspended sentence on April 15th after she pled guilty. The way the laws work here in the United States, I mean, I'm sure there are places out there with way more bizarre and crazy laws than what we have here, but for it to only be a misdemeanor to deface, literally and figuratively, a corpse, I guess if it's only a misdemeanor, it's only a misdemeanor. You're the one who has to live with the fact that you're that crazy. The next article is courtesy of Times of India.indiatimes.com. Saudi Arabia is advertising for more swordsmen as execution rates soar. Saudi Arabia advertised vacancies for 8 executioners today after beheading nearly as many people since the start of the year as it did in the whole of 2014. The civil service ministry said that no qualifications were necessary and that the applicants would be exempted from the usual entrance exams. It said that as well as beheadings, the successful candidates would be expected to carry out amputations ordered by the court under the kingdom's strict version of Islamic Sharia law. Amputation of one or both hands is a routine penalty for theft. Drug trafficking, rape, murder, apostasy, and armed robbery are all punishable by death. Most executions are carried out by beheading, but a few are carried out by a firing squad, stoning, or crucifixion. All are carried out in public, and video footage sometimes appears on the internet despite a ban on filming, and you can go to LiveLeak and find videos just like that. LiveLeak is a great site for the fact that you can pretty much watch just about anything you would want to watch, so go check them out. They're an interesting site, to say the least. Already this year, it has put 85 people to death in what human rights group Amnesty International has described as a macabre spike. Last year, Saudi Arabia executed 87 people, according to the AFP, ranking it third in the world by the use of death penalty. The Interior Ministry says the death penalty is an important deterrent, but on a visit to Riyadh this month, French President Francois Hollande said capital punishment should be banned. I highly doubt you'll ever see it banned there. I mean, I'm not going to say anything bad about Saudi Arabia. I won't say anything good about them either. There's certain things that I won't talk about. Politics and religion are two things that I really won't talk about because I usually end up making people mad. I just don't like talking about it, so I won't go there. If you want to become a swordsman and execute people and cut off people's hands and feet and stuff, Saudi Arabia has some openings. All right, one more thing that I wanted to take a look at. It's a video from YouTube, and it's a perfect building found still intact on Mars. Now, this guy, What's Up in the Sky 37, which is a guy, I mean, I think he posts a lot of like Photoshop pictures and stuff that he finds on NASA websites and stuff. And this one, it caught my attention because, I mean, it is 13 minutes long. The kid's pretty long-winded, but go take a look at it anyway. It's fairly neat just to see the video. If you don't want to hear him talk, just turn the volume down. But go take a look at it. It's a neat video. The rock is rather different than most of the rocks that you'll see in the picture that he's showing. And it's kind of pointed like it could be a building. Kind of reminds me of a UFO type craft. I'm not really sure what it could be. It could just be an anomaly in the picture. Although it does match the surrounding picture. As far as graininess and color and everything. But the shape of it is what catches me off guard. It could be a mountain. Could be a rock. Could be a building. Could be a crashed spacecraft. Could just be natural shape. I don't know. But it's long. It's slanted. It's curved. It kind of has, what's that one key on a keyboard that kind of looks like parentheses in a way, but it kind of has the point that sticks out in the middle. Kind of looks like what you could make a mouth out of or something. Anyway, like a weird curvy thing that's kind of thicker in the top than it is on the sides, and very smooth, very rounded, very apparent, very uniform. Go take a look at it. It's an interesting video. The kid does get a little bit long-winded, and sometimes he makes some good points, but if you don't want to listen to it, just go look at the video and turn the sound down. But either way, if you got an opinion on this stuff, let me know. I would love to get some feedback from people. I know I'm just getting back into it and people don't know if I'm still going to be making shows, or I understand that completely. But if you want, send me some feedback. I'd love to hear some feedback from you guys. You can find me on pretty much any of the social media networks. So let me know. Send me an email. Call me. Either way, let's go ahead and take a break and we'll be back in just a minute.
There's something. big coming.
I didn't even expect this.
We're gonna need your help.
Hello, I'm Casey Whalen, writer and director of We're Alive. In May of 2009, We're Alive began providing listeners across the globe with hours of free, high-quality entertainment. Since that time, our story has come to a close, but the world of We're Alive has still more stories to tell. Our next story, currently in the works, is called Lockdown. It follows a small group of inmates and guards trapped inside of a section of Twin Towers Jail. As the dichotomy of the guard-inmate relationship continues to break down, they are forced to work together and find a way to escape while the rest of the world ends around them. Lockdown is the most ambitious project I've ever attempted. At 350 pages, this behemoth is going to be equivalent to about a half of a season of We're Alive. While you'll be introduced to a whole new group of characters in this mini-epic, you can expect to hear from a few of your old favorites. It's going to be an amazing story, but we need your help in order to tell it. When I made We're Alive, it was out of my own pocket, along with the hard work of many volunteers donated to make my vision a reality. This time around, we're running a Kickstarter to raise funds for a professional music composer, casting director, editors, and of course actors to bring you the highest possible quality audio adventure. We have some great exclusive rewards in store for those who support us, including early access to Lockdown, limited edition CD sets, and a book of the scripts, and even walk-on roles for those who always wanted to be in the world of We're Alive. Join us as our Kickstarter officially launches June 2nd at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I can't wait to share this thrilling audio drama with you. It's going to be like nothing you've ever heard before. Visit WhereAlive.com for all the Kickstarter details.
Ladies, ladies, ladies!
The boys from Uneducated Humor.
We're in the his heels!
Who the fuck are these guys?
It's Uneducated Humor, bitches.
Oh, I've read on the internet these guys are a couple little fuckholes.
Uneducated Humor? More like uneducated shitheads.
Sex, booze, and fail. The story of every man's life. Come check out Uneducated Humor. Listen to Arnold and Chance do what they do best, which is fail. And trade stories from their personal lives and read bizarre news headlines. Guaranteed to make you laugh. You can find us on Stitcher, Podomatic, iTunes, and Podbay. If not, feel free to Google us and see what they say about us.
No, I Googled that. Said you fucking blow.
At this hour, they report the level of the mysterious radiation continues to increase steadily. So long as this situation remains, government spokesmen warn that dead bodies will continue to be transformed into the flesh-eating ghouls. All persons who die during this crisis, from whatever cause, will come back to life to seek human victims unless their bodies are first disposed of by cremation.
Are you ready for the zombie apocalypse? Maybe you should check out the Zombie Research Society. Founded in 2007, the Zombie Research Society is dedicated to raising zombie awareness in the fields of science, survival, and culture. Become a member of ZRS and let your voice be heard. The life you save could be your own. Remember, what you don't know can eat you.
Log in to zombieresearch.org for more information.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed your little break there. The next article that we're going to take a look at is courtesy of TheGuardian.com. And eating human brains helped a Papua New Guinea tribe resist disease. Research involving a former brain-eating tribe from Papua New Guinea is helping scientists better understand how mad cow disease and other so-called prion conditions and may also offer insights into Parkinson's and dementia. People of the Fore tribe, F-O-R-E, studied by scientists from Britain and Papua New Guinea, have developed genetic resistance to a mad cow-like disease called kuru, which was spread mostly by the now-abandoned ritual of eating relatives' brains at funerals. Experts say the cannibalistic practice led to a major epidemic of kuru prion disease among the Fore people, which at its height in the late 1950s caused the death of up to 2% of the population each year. In findings published in the science journal Nature, the researchers said they had identified the specific prion resistance gene and found that it also protects against all forms of the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. This is a striking example of Darwinian evolution in humans, the epidemic of prion disease selecting a single genetic change that provided complete protection against any invariably fatal dementia, said John Collins of the Institute of Neurology's Prion Unit at University College London. Collins said his team is now conducting more studies to understand the molecular basis of this effect, hoping to find clues on the seeds of other misshapen proteins that develop in the brain and cause the common forms of dementia. Worldwide, about 47.5 million people have dementia, and there are 7.7 new cases every year. I thought that was a really interesting thing because most people, they look at cannibalism as being bad, which for the most part it is, but in certain cultures it's not. In certain places in the world, it's something that they've been doing for millennia, or you know, at least generations. So one thing I wanted to know is, did they know that doing that, eating the brains, would give them some kind of a protection? Was it a spiritual thing? What was it exactly that caused them to know or even just have the idea of eating brains and that it would protect you some way? Is this just kind of a side thing, kind of an anomaly in the fact that they were eating brains, but they just got this advantage of resisting disease? I thought it was really interesting that there was kind of this positive effect of it to keep them from getting dementia, that they would eat brains, but move on to the next article, which is courtesy of vintage.es. There are 30 rare historical photos proving humans have always been weird. Most of the pictures date from the early 1900s before and after the two world wars, a time when everyone needed just a little bit of laughter to get them across the terrible times that were upon them. There are some really kind of weird but yet kind of funny pictures in here. My wife's a teacher, so the first one really kind of gave me a laugh. It's teachers getting wasted on spring break in 1910, and they're all in their dresses with what looked like they probably have corsets on and big bun-like hair and hats, and they're all just sitting there like chugging back beers or something. It's quite funny, from 1910. There's some kids here in a schoolyard learning how to swim, even though they didn't have access to water, from 1922. One that was really fascinating was Stockholm's telephone tornet, connecting over 5,000 telephone lines in the city in 1890. It just looks weird to see all this stuff going through the top of a bridge or a tower. It's just fascinating. Some other stuff here that is strange and bizarre, to say the least. And to go to show you some of the technology that people had back then and how they would have come up with it, like the tank busters that the Germans had, the Goliath tank busters. To know that they even thought of that kind of stuff was fascinating. And that's just kind of the simple stuff, too. There's just a lot of really good pictures here. Like, I didn't know that after realizing that poor women were using flour sacks to make clothing for their kids, some flour mills started using floured fabric for their sacks of flour in 1939 at the beginning of, middle of the war, I guess. It's just neat to know that people did, that you would not see that these days. Did you know that in 1916, they had electric scooters? They also had electric cars back then. Some of this stuff is just bizarre and weird. This one here that I'm looking at, if I can get the window to scroll down at all, it's the first woman, or the only woman, who got hit by a meteorite in 1954. Her name was Anne Hodges, and she's the only person to be struck by a meteorite. And man, I tell you what, it's a nasty bruise. There's some neat stuff here. I want you to go take a look at it and check out all the other pictures that are there. It's just 30 rare historical photos proving that we're weird. And we really are. In general, people are just strange. They're weird. And take pride in your weirdness and your strangeness. It's to be proud of, really, in my opinion, just because, you know, who wants to be normal? I mean, normal is good, but weird is better. At least I think so anyway, because I've always been in that side of the fence. I've always been on the weird side. Anyway, this next article, it's actually a video that I want you to go take a look at. Kind of an article too, but the video is the best part of it all. It's courtesy of dailyrecord.co.uk, and it's the creepiest phone accessory you'll ever see, and it is pretty creepy. It really is. It's the latest iPhone charger. It's a lifelike flesh-colored umbilical cord. While it provides the essential electric life to your beloved phone, the cord also pulses and throbs when it's plugged in. The thick end of the rubbery body part seems to flex and lift up the bottom of the device. It receives a favorable review from the people who have it and are using it. They said that if only they know to make this product real, I'm sure it would sell. I'm sharing this video in hopes that they will soon be able to make this thing come alive. I want you to watch it. It is creepy. Weird. It looks like this weird flesh-colored umbilical cord snake is trying to swallow your phone. It's bizarre. It really is bizarre. All right, the next article is courtesy of dailyrecord.co.uk, and it supposedly shows a UFO hovering over Loch Ness. And, I mean, does it mean that Loch Ness is a paranormal place and Nessie is, what, now an alien? Really? Instead of a dinosaur, maybe, that's left over from millions of years of evolution and being captive in a lake? I thought it was really interesting. There's some photos there that you can go and take a look at it. And what it appears to show are two identical light sources hovering above the loch. To me, it looks like there was just a reflection on a lens. Maybe the picture was taken from inside of a car and somebody was trying to cover up the light, the flash. Maybe it was, maybe it is a UFO. But these are two identical. I mean, they're 90% identical. They are two light sources. They kind of look a little curved at the bottom with kind of lines coming off of them. To me, it doesn't necessarily look like a UFO, but it is interesting to say the least that supposedly there might be some truth to the idea that something actually paranormal is going on there besides just having a creature that nobody really ever sees and can never get a good picture of. I wanted to go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of HuffingtonPost.co.uk. Some strange stuff going on in Papua New Guinea lately. Some really, really strange things. There's some audio there that I'm going to try and post if I can. I don't know. I'm having issues with pulling video lately, pulling audio. So hopefully I can get that and play it for you, but I'm not sure at this point. So I'm just going to read you the article, and it says, a woman accused of being a sorceress has been hacked to death by a mob in Papua New Guinea. Known only as Mephila, she was killed with an axe by a group of men in a remote part of the country's Inga province last week. Two other women were targeted in the attack, but they were rescued by the other villagers who heard their screams for help. Deputy Police Commander of Inga Province, Apenis Nili, told Guardian Australia he learned of Mephila's death on Wednesday. He said the lady, she was accused of performing magic, resulting in the death of several people in the village. With this total lie, just because of the strong belief in sorcery, she was murdered. Nila has vowed to apprehend Mephila's attackers and promised to assemble a team to exhume her body and arrest the subject. The vicious killing of Mephila highlights the Papua New Guinean government's persistent failure to address the wave of attacks against those, mainly women, accused of sorcery. Violent crime and allegations of witchcraft are rife in Papua New Guinea, where the government recently voted to revive the death penalty, which people might be taking a little too seriously. They might be taking it into their hands instead of leaving it up to the government. So, I don't know. Governments are good, governments are bad. I have my opinions, and so do you. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of blogs.discoverymagazine.com. I found this to be really interesting. It's not something that I ever thought about until I saw this article, but it makes sense because I've heard of phantom limb syndrome. Well, this is phantom eye syndrome. Amputees often feel eerie sensations from their missing limbs. These phantom limbs feelings can include pain, itching, tingling, or even a sense of trying to pick up something. Patients who lose an eye may have similar symptoms with the addition of actual phantoms. Phantom eye syndrome, or PES, has been studied in the past, but University of Liverpool psychologist Laura Hope Stone and her colleagues recently conducted the largest study of PES specifically in patients who'd lost an eye to cancer. The researchers sent surveys to 239 patients who had been treated for uveal melanoma at the Liverpool Ocular Oncology Center. All of these patients had had one eye surgically removed. Some of their surgeries were as recent as 4 months, and others had taken place almost 4.5 years earlier. 3/4 of the patients returned the surveys, sharing the details of how they were going with their monocular lives. 60% of the respondents said they had symptoms of phantom eye syndrome. Patients with visual symptoms most often saw single shapes or simple colors, but some people reported more distinct images. Quote, for example, resembling wallpaper, a kaleidoscope, or fireworks, or even specific scenes and people. Then there were the ghosts. Some people said they had seen strangers haunting their fields of vision, as in the survey responses that you can read right here. A figure walking at the side of me, an 82-year-old man. Moving images of people, they disappear when I look to the right, said a 78-year-old man. People passing in light and items that were not there. In the dark, I can see people, said a 77-year-old woman. As though I'm swimming underwater through reeds, there's never any color, said a 52-year-old man. Once I awoke to find a person unidentified standing next to the bed, said a 70-year-old woman. To know that you can see something without an eye, there's obviously just your mind creating something for you to see, knowing that it's gone, kind of compensating for it not being there. Or is there some pathway into another dimension that you are possibly seeing into? Maybe, you never know. You never know. The brain and the reality we live in are strange things. There's a bit more to this article here. I want you to go read about it. I want you to look at the rest of the article, read the stuff that I didn't read to you, and make a decision for yourself. Is it just simply something in your mind causing you to see things to compensate for that? Some part of your mind taking over where your eye used to be? Or are you actually seeing something and seeing it a little bit more easily than you can with two eyes? Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of HuffingtonPost.com. Godzilla is now officially a resident of Japan. And it states that the famous monster now has the papers to prove he is officially a resident of Japan, according to the Japanese language news site Shinjuku Keizai Shimbun. Godzilla was appointed both a special resident and tourism ambassador for Tokyo's Shinjuku ward back in April as a promotion for the district's new Godzilla-themed hotel, Hotel Gracery Shinjuku. Guests at the hotel can opt to stay in what is called the Godzilla View Room, where they can look out at the head of the life-size Godzilla statue from their bed. On May 25th, the Shinjuku ward office produced 3,000 copies of an official residency document for Godzilla to be handed out to fans on a first-come, first-served basis. And there's a picture of it there for you to go take a look at. I thought it was pretty neat. English language, I've always heard, is the most complicated language to learn. But for me, looking at Asian languages, I don't understand how you do it. I really don't. It looks like it would be impossible to figure out what it says. But I mean, if you grow up listening to it or grow up seeing it, growing up writing it, you're going to understand it completely. I don't. I thought it was really neat that they actually showed a picture of it there. And here's a picture of what you see whenever you rise up out of bed. There is a Godzilla head right outside, probably a 7-foot-long window. It's approximately 2 or 2.5 feet high. And you look out, you see Godzilla's red eye and his body right there. All right, we're going to take one more break before we finish off with the last articles of the show. I believe there's 7 more here. When we get back, we're going to be taking a look at some Italian pizzerias are cooking meals with the wood from stolen coffins. Cobwebs from millions of spiders rain down in the sky in an Australian town. A 75-million-year-old dinosaur blood and collagen sample has been discovered in fossil fragments. And apparently the world's going to end in September. So you guys, stay put. Go get a drink of water or something. We'll be back in just a minute. welcome back, everybody, to the 13 Skulls. I'm your host, TJ. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of weekandweird.com. And apparently, Italian pizzerias are allegedly cooking with used wood from disinterred coffins that have been stolen. Naples has long been known for its incredible cuisine, but when it comes to their pizza, foodies can't stop gushing about it. Not only are their pies regularly referred to as the best in the world, but they can also lay claim to creating the Neapolitan here in the 1700s. Over the last few years, Italy's cemeteries have seen a rash of robberies and vandalism that have had the authorities concerned. In 2009. Nearly 5,000 flower pots went missing from a local graveyard, only resurfaced on the black market. According to Italian police, there's reason to believe that coffins, even some that are hundreds of years old and being dug up, chopped up, and sold, are going to many low-end pizzerias in order to fuel their wood-fired stoves. The delicious margherita pizza, while visiting Naples a few years ago, you know, there's a good chance it tasted a little bit like a dead guy. You just didn't know it. In order to follow up on their suspicions, the local police launched an investigation in 2010, but so far there have been no breaks in the case. It's not exactly surprising, since roughly 25,000 pizzerias employ nearly 150,000 people and make loads and loads of money. Did they take the bodies out of caskets and fire it up to make their pizza? Sounds a bit suspicious to me, but hey, you know, if the pizza's good, the pizza's good. All right, the next article that I wanted to take a look at, courtesy of OddityCentral.com. Earlier this month, the residents of Goulburn, a small town in Australia's southern tablelands, were spooked to discover their properties blanketed by millions of tiny spiders and mounds of their silk threads. The spiders had apparently rained down from the sky, silk and thread and all, a phenomenon known as angel rain. Anyone else experiencing this angel hair, or maybe aka millions of spiders falling from the sky right now, wrote resident Ian Watson of the Goulburn Community Forum Facebook page. I'm 10 minutes out of town and you can clearly see hundreds of little spiders floating along with their webs, and my home is covered in them. I think that's pretty funny. I would be a bit scared of that too. I don't like spiders anyway, but it just sounds absolutely awful. It really does. Experts say that the arachnid rains are actually a natural phenomenon and not as uncommon as you'd think. It's referred to as spider rain or angel hair in scientific circles and is actually a form of spider transportation called ballooning. Ballooning is not an uncommon behavior of spiders, retired arachnologist Rick Vetter told Live Science. They climb up some high area and stick their butts up in the air and release silk. Then they just take off. I would not be a happy camper if this happened. It would freak me out, especially one of the bottom pictures that you'll see. You look up and it literally is just a blanket of spiders and spider webs. It is not something I would be cool with. I don't even know what to think if I woke up and my house was covered in spiders. Anyway, yeah, don't like spiders. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of TheGuardian.com again. And 75-million-year-old dinosaur blood and collagen is discovered in fossil fragments. Scientists have discovered what appear to be the red blood cells and collagen fibers from the remains of dinosaurs that lived 75 million years ago. It's amazing this stuff could last for that long. Traces of the soft tissue were found by accident when researchers at Imperial College in London analyzed 8 rather shabby fossils that had been dug up in Canada a century ago before finding their way to the Natural History Museum in London. The findings suggest that scores of dinosaur fossils in museums around the world could retain soft tissues, and with it answers to major questions about dinosaur physiology and evolution. It's also making scientists ponder whether dinosaur DNA might also be able to survive for that long. Most of the fossils the scientists studied were fragments and in very poor condition, so maybe fragments of fossils from better condition might be better off. You never know. We might actually have a real-life Jurassic World on our hands for some time in the near future if this continues on and they were able to find that. I would like to know, because I don't think anybody ever really knows what colors dinosaurs were. Nobody really knows what they really truly look like. They can get an idea from the, you know, the animals that are living now as to what they might have looked like then, but it would be fascinating to grow one and actually see what it truly looked like. I think it's neat. I'd love to see a Jurassic Park type place one day. So let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of conspiracyclub.co. Road workers in eastern China were given the task of widening a road in the city of Taizhou in the Jiangsu province. They were digging about 6 feet below the surface when they came across something completely by chance that no one was expecting to find. They hit something solid while they were digging. After a bit of research, they realized they had a buried tomb. It was time to call in the professionals, which they did. They called in some archaeologists, and they dated the chamber to be over 700 years old. There are pictures of it there, and as they were opening it up, the team prepares to see what was inside. This is where it gets a little graphic, so if you don't like stuff like seeing dead people, then you don't want to continue on. If you do and you find it fascinating, go ahead and keep looking. It's really interesting. They open it up, and they find the contents. They see a bunch of rare silks and linens lying in some sort of a brown liquid. They discovered that there was a woman under there, a mummy, wrapped up in all of the fabric. They were amazed to see that her body was in almost perfect condition. I wonder what the water was, if she was buried with it or if it's just kind of rainwater that seeped in over the 700 years. But it's in fantastic shape, and she had like a maybe jade or something along those lines, like a ring on her hand. They think the mummy was a high-ranking member of the Ming Dynasty. You know, she's in really well-preserved shape. Her skin is in great shape. It's nice and taut. It's not wrinkly and fallen off. I just wonder, after they brought her out, if she started to decay rather quickly from that point on. I would believe so, but there's a lot of neat stuff in there that she was wrapped up with, that she had with her, and more for you to go and read of the article. There's a lot of pictures there detailing the process of how they got her out and looking through everything that she had with her. The last time this body, this woman, saw the light of day was 700 years ago. It's great. Let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of humansarefree.com. Advanced technologies might have existed in the past. Heptagrams are being found all over the world, indicate unknown drilling techniques. They are found in Norway, Australia, United Kingdom, and even in South and Central America. This mysterious star shape has been found in different corners of the world, and its origin and purpose are unknown. The mysterious star was discovered in Norway, and according to ancient astronaut theorists, the remarkable structure proves evidence of the existence of advanced technology in antiquity. The discovery was made on 30th of November in 2007 when a construction worker found the mysterious hole drilled inside of a rock. It looked like a seven-holed star, and so they had never seen before, and it's smooth all the way down to the base and has a perfectly symmetrical shape with a background that is very smooth and a polished surface. They were drilled in directly into the sediment layers. They weren't made parallel, so they were made at different angles. So something had to drill it out. I just wonder if there's some sort of technology that they didn't know about then. It's a certain way of drilling that came about. Anyway, some are more defined than others, but either way, it's still fascinating. It's still really interesting. So let's go ahead and go on to the next article, which is courtesy of ancient-code.com. And the secrets of the ancient walls of Sacsayhuaman, where astronomical calculations were made thousands of years ago. It's located in an elevation of more than 12,000 feet in the northern outskirts of the city of Cusco in Peru. Surface collections and analysis of pottery at Sacsayhuaman indicate that the earliest occupation of the hilltop base dates back at least a millennia, making it one of the oldest ancient establishments on the planet. According to recent studies, archaeologists state that the Kilki culture built the older sections of the site approximately 1,000 years ago, but there are numerous mysteries surrounding the incredible fortress that has baffled archaeology and history ever since its discovery. The ceremonial fortress of Sacsayhuaman stands out because its walls formed by eccentric angles cut and adjusted with such precision that engineers and builders today have a very difficult time replicating it. There are many theories to try and answer the how, why, and when this incredible site was built, but none of the theories are able to fully answer all of the questions. Dr. Cunningham, author of The Long Journey, 400,000 Years of Stone Age Science, proposes in his new theory that ancient civilizations developed a writing system based on archaic shapes, having as main note the study of the movements of the moon and the sun. There's a lot here for you to go read. Just the way their rocks are put together, apparently they try and show different patterns and times of year with the moon and the earth and the sun. It's really neat. It's a very well put together wall, very fascinating. It makes you wonder just really how they would put them together in an age where moving stones that far would be rather difficult to do. It just makes you wonder about technology and the ancients. How far advanced were they, at the beginning of human history that we know of compared to what we actually know? What were they capable of? They had to know more than we think they do. Let's go ahead and move on to the last article of this show. It's courtesy of uk.news.yahoo.com. Apparently, a comet is going to hit the Earth and we're all going to die in September. I hope not, because my mom's birthday is in September and I kind of want her to see her birthday, so hopefully not. You might want to put those plans for last-minute autumn holiday on hold as the world is going to end in September. Conspiracy theorists reckon that civilization will cease to exist in September because of a giant comet that's about to smash straight into Earth. The exact date is not set in stone, but the impact is predicted any time between September 22nd and September 28th, which is my mom's birthday, giving you just 3 months to get through your bucket list. It may not be the best news to hear on what was a Monday when this article came out, but biblical theorists have been predicting the end of the world for some time on various websites, and they've done it quite a bit. That one guy who claimed that the world was going to end not too long ago died. I can't remember what his name was. They also claim that politicians already know the existence of the world-ending comet, but they choose not to tell the public because they don't want to start a mass panic. A spokesperson from NASA says NASA knows of no asteroid or comet currently on a collision course with Earth, so the probability of a major collision is quite small. In fact, as best as we can tell, no large object is likely to strike the Earth at any time in the next several hundred years. Some theorists disagree with the method of extinction, however, believing that the whole thing will be kicked off by the CERN Large Hadron Collider. Hasn't happened yet. But anyway, one blogger predicted that CERN logo is 666, the sign of the beast in a circle. Anyway, yeah, rapture predictions have been going on for a long time, and none of them come right because you won't ever really know when the rapture is going to come, when the end of the world is going to happen, because it will happen before anyone is aware of it. I think it's really fascinating. There's a little bit more there, some videos that you can go and watch about comets, a giant asteroid that buzzed past the Earth and the Moon that actually had its own moon going around it, which is pretty neat to watch. There's got to be something out there that's heading towards this Earth right now that's out of our realm of being able to see it, or we just haven't found it yet. How long of a time would we actually have between the time that we found out we're all going to die and we actually do, like an extinction event? Let's go ahead and take one more quick break and then we'll close out the show. Alright guys and gals, boys and girls, let's go ahead and close out the show since it is the end of the show. Let's get the formalities buried in the dirt and out of the way. The13skulls.com, that's where you can find me. Or you can find me on Instagram, I'm at the13skulls, facebook.com/the13skulls. I'm at the13skulls both on G+ and Twitter. I'm also kind of picking up new things here and there. You know, we'll see. I'm thinking about doing that Throwback Thursday kind of thing. I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet, but I will be adding more content into the feed on a more regular basis. I'm just not sure what I'm going to do yet. I need to get a new microphone badly. Anyway, I'm always wanting to promote independent bands, so if you know anybody that has music, let me know. Send it to me. Get me in contact with them. Let's get their music on the show. A big shout out to Rojan Lobo out of Project Archivist. Love you guys. Hope you're doing good. If you have an experience or feedback, please email them to me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. If you have any questions or feedback or comments, I'd love to hear it. Or you can call in and tell me your feedback at 817-986-0019. You can always give me a review in iTunes. I love that kind of stuff too. You can find me in Stitcher. I'm at the13skulls.com or stitcher.com/the13skulls. It's also, there's a link on the sidebar. You can check it out there too on the13skulls.com. Some of the music you heard will be provided by either Mevio's Music Alley, freemusicarchive.org, or maybe it's something that I'm reusing or something somebody sent me. The sound effects that have been, are being, and will be used in this show are courtesy of the Free Sound Project at freesound.org. I will post up links to everything you heard about it in the show notes. If you have a podcast, radio show, book, or anything at all, you want to send me a promo to it, I would love to have it. I'm in the creation process right now of making a new promo for the 13 Skulls, so hopefully one of these days I'll actually get that done and get that sent out to people who are asking for it. Well, everyone, I really do. I hope you're having a great day, night, week, weekend, or whenever it is that you're listening to this, and I will talk to y'all again on another day.
Blindly, infinity to me, end of all.